the volume.
This Sessions is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There's no better place to make every moment more than with FanDuel. They're America's number one sportsbook for a reason, y'all. It's so easy to use. It's safe and secure. That's one of the main things for me. I don't want any BS. I love that there's no BS with FanDuel. Plus, you get your winnings fast. Now, winnings are delivered in as quick as 2 hours. Plus, it's super fun to combine multiple bets from the same game into a same game parlay. It's awesome. So if you are new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app to get started now. Sign up with the promo code Renee, that's R-E-N-E-E, so that they know that I sent you. Disclaimer, 21 plus and present in Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Louisiana, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, Wyoming, or West Virginia. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Or text next step to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777, or visit ccpg.org/chat for Connecticut, 1-800-GAMBLER, or visit fanduel.com/RG for Colorado, Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Virginia, 1-877-770-STOP for Louisiana, 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan, 1-877-8-HOPE-NY, or text HOPE-NY for New York. Tennessee Redline, 1-800-889-9789, and 1-800-522-4700 for Wyoming. Visit www.1800gambler.net for West Virginia. Hey guys, welcome to the best of the Sessions. What we have done is we've combined the best of Tuesday's episode and Thursday's episode, mashed them together to give you a beautiful little audio gift for your ear holes. We have some awesome, awesome guests on the show. Cannot thank people enough for taking the time to come hang out with me. Give me a little bit of their time. We give you a little bit of that. We all get to hang out and enjoy it, learn a little bit about each other. So it's really cool to mash these all together, and you guys can get those little abbreviated highlights of both of the interviews throughout the week. Also, of course, if you want to listen to the full lengths, you can do that. They all exist. Just make sure to check out all things from the Volume Podcast Network. Like, subscribe, turn on those notifications, all that good stuff. But let's get into it. Here's the best of the Sessions. How are you feeling? What's going on with you?
Not a lot, you know? Nothing's going on. I feel great. I hopefully look great.
You look great. He looks great. Everybody give it up. He looks great.
I was just hoping for that. Just baiting people to just tell me I look good.
Well, I had to make up for the fact that I emasculated you before we walked out.
She did emasculate me before we come out to this podcast. It's a strategy she has. I feel like she did that on Talking Smack, too.
I did not. Okay, Talking Smack.
Okay.
I loved doing Talking Smack, and I get asked about Talking Smack all the time. It was one of those like moments in my career where I was like, oh my God, this is the thing that I love doing. We weren't scripted, Wild West. We just got to like fuck around. Did you?
Can we say?
We can swear here, yeah?
Yeah. Do it.
No.
Come on.
No, a little bit? I've got kids.
They're not going to listen.
They might fucking listen to this thing. And my little boy is going to fuck somebody up. And I don't know. It's just going to be.
What is your memory of doing Talking Smack?
So I enjoyed it in the sense of sometimes I was trying to get fired. Like bringing up fisting on Talking Smack.
I was trying. The hog.
The hog. Oh, God. I forgot about the hog. Doing a whole bit for weeks on end. And when they told me after I'd done it the first time, don't talk about James Ellsworth having a huge hog. And I would just bring it up constantly because I was so frustrated at not being cleared to wrestle that I was ready to go. And also sometimes they would bring me to TV just to do Talking Smack.
It was a hit television show. Of course they did.
It wasn't so hit that they kept it going. So
yeah, I mean, it lives on now, not to what we were doing, but it does still kind of exist to a degree.
What do you mean?
It's still a show. We're
Talking
just not
Smack
on
is
it.
A show?
It is, right?
No.
I think it is.
Nah.
They do like Raw Talk and Talking Smack. It's much different from what you and I were doing.
Oh, okay.
Now it's like a polished in a studio show.
Oh, okay.
We were like, we had like no backdrop. We had like Rhino was coming in dressed as Santa Claus and shit. Like we.
Nobody's accusing AJ Styles of being a flat earther? Is that. Is that not happening on their shows?
I'm pretty sure that's where it got kiboshed.
Okay, okay.
So I always loved doing that show, but yeah, it was a really interesting time in your career where I was like, well, I'm reaping the benefits of working with a man who, like, it's a really special place when you, like, don't give a shit and you can just have fun. You don't really care what the repercussions are going to be. So I was loving that, but I know for you it was, like, definitely a weird part in your career where I was like, what's happening?
Yeah, so there were parts of it that I really enjoyed that really made me laugh. We had one episode. It was really, really great. Alexa Bliss is on. Maybe she had just lost the championship or something like that. I don't remember exactly the thing. But I had said something to her, and then she's also like, and the Patriots just lost the Super Bowl. And, but this was on a Tuesday. The Super Bowl was Sunday. That's when they had that great comeback in the fourth quarter. And there was a writer in the back saying, see something about the Patriots. She didn't know what was going on, so she said, and the Patriots lost. I was like, well, great news. I'm sure you've missed it, but the Patriots actually won. They came back. And she was just so like, I don't know.
Well, that was a very funny
the
moment
Miz
on that
one,
show.
The Miz one.
I mean, the Miz one's kind of the most epic thing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, well, we don't need to like harp on this, but what is like your recollection of that show in that moment when that was all going down with you and Mike?
Part of me like doesn't want to let the cat out of the bag, but part of me loves the story.
Tell the story. Tell the story. Tell the story.
I think Mike may have told the story already, so maybe the cat's already out of the bag.
The cat left the bag and is in the alley. Let's get to it.
So Miz was very frustrated. He was Intercontinental Champion and wasn't being on TV much. I was very frustrated that they weren't clearing me to wrestle despite numerous doctors having cleared me to wrestle. And you know, I understand why, but that's a long story anyway. So just getting to the point of my frustration. So we came up with this thing, and the original plan that Mike and I had come up with was I was going to fucking deck him. We wanted to get under each other's skin so much that it was plausible that I would legit be angry enough to punch him. And so that was the intent. And the idea was either they're going to fire me or it's going to make people want to see the match so much that they're going to have to clear me to wrestle. But then Mike did such a great job. Intuitively, I felt it was better to walk off.
Interesting.
And leave him, because it was also like, God, this is so good. Leave him with his heat.
Right.
And it was like,
he was like in tears. He had tears in his eyes.
He was so good. He was magic.
Yeah, he was.
He was magic. And I think that's the thing. Mike and I don't like each other, legitimately. But Mike is also somebody that I respect a lot for working very, very hard. And so, like, when he was just going off and I was like, this is so good. It'd be so good if I punched him. But maybe it would resonate more and be better for him if I walked.
Right.
So that's what happened. So, yeah, and then everybody, including Maurice, was like, what is going on?
Yes.
Why is this happening?
I remember they cut to me. I'm like, and we're going to take a quick commercial break. Not really sure what's happening here.
So, yeah.
So if you had actually decked him, I might have blacked out because it was so tense sitting between the two of you. And I'm like, oh, something bad's happening here. If you had actually physically attacked him, yeah, I would have passed out on the desk. So I guess thanks for that. But it would have been good television, too.
It would have been great television. It might have gotten canceled, but I might have gotten fired. It would have been, I don't know, there would have been pluses and minuses.
Well, the show got canceled, and you don't work there anymore anyways. So
yeah.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Okay, what was that last year like for you with WWE?
Oh, it was magic. You laugh thinking that I'm lying, but it's not. Nobody else has said this. I loved wrestling in front of no people. I specifically loved wrestling in the performance center with no noise.
Yeah.
Because it was like, whoa, this is wild.
I remember, was it you and AJ did like a 2 out of 3 falls match or something like that that was like really
crazy? Yeah. So I'm kind of proud of that, but that wasn't what I'm into.
Okay.
Because there were people there. They had the people
the
who were trained. Yeah, the NXT people who were like, they're not really cheering like a crowd would, like, emotionally, right? So they're just cheering because they're supposed to cheer. And then when it goes to commercial break, we stop, and everybody just stops, and everybody just sits down. And then they're like, okay, what are we going to do next, right? And But I loved like the Performance Center with no Thunderdome, just like me and Drew Gulak were just doing doing wild stuff. I wrestled Claudio, and we were just talking about that the other day. It was a lot of fun. And then the I was a little bit a part of the creative team.
What was that like? Because I remember hearing that you were part of the creative team, and like, how did that come about? And like, even for you to like accept that position, we all know what that position can be like.
Yeah,
so, obviously different for you, but
so the pandemic was happening. Somebody in one of my segments, it was right before Brie was about to give birth to our son, Buddy, and it was like a month before that, somebody in one of my segments had gotten COVID.
Oh, shit.
And they called me and said, hey, you were in a segment with somebody who got COVID. A bunch of people in the segment got COVID. You might have COVID. I tested. I didn't have COVID, but then I said, I'm probably not coming to work.
Yeah.
I requested. I didn't say, like, hey, I'm absolutely not coming to work. I'd say, like, hey, I don't think I should come to work. My wife's pregnant. We didn't, you know, due soon. And so anyways, so they were completely fine with that. They were great with that. And then Bruce Prichard called me and said, hey, I know you're gone, but would you like to be a part of the creative team, be a part of the meetings and stuff like that, that they were doing all through Zoom and all that kind of stuff anyways. And I said, yeah. And so I did that. Huh. I loved it. I know a lot of people have talked a lot of crap about writers or...
Oh, thankless job.
Yeah, it's a thankless job. I think there's a lot of smart, fun writers.
Absolutely.
That I loved working with.
I would always think that too, because like you see those writers and like obviously they have amazing resumes. They are smart, brilliant people. You're just working within certain circumstances, but they're amazing.
And so, and like there's a writer... I hope he still works there. I think sometimes people sometimes reach out to me via text, but I never check my phone. And then I'm like, I have over 3,000 unread text messages
on my phone.
Yeah, I'm
pretty sure I texted you months and months ago to do this show and you didn't respond to me.
Text is a bad way to get a hold of me.
I'll text Brie next time.
Yeah. Actually, texting Brie is the most efficient way to...
People do that to me too. It's bullshit. People always message me for John. It's so not fair.
Yeah, well, we've got the game figured out. Mm-hmm. So like Ryan Callahan, who was one of, if not the lead SmackDown writer at the time. We would talk about SmackDown sometimes on Mondays. He's like, hey, I'd like to run some ideas by you. And we talk. But then we just talk afterwards. I love Ryan. Like, I loved dealing with Bruce Prichard. Like, I know some people talk bad about Bruce. I love Bruce. Like, I really enjoyed it. I loved working with the writers. Jen
Pepperman.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Jen is hilarious.
She's great. I love Jen.
And she won 2 Emmys.
She's amazing.
Right? Yeah. So, like,
so people that want to like talk shit on the writing team, they are very qualified, right?
Well,
just so you know.
Not only are they qualified, they're fun people to be around if you can accept that they're not wrestlers, right?
Yeah.
And they're just like, hey, this is a fun person to talk to.
Yeah.
Like, I found...
Kirsch?
Kirsch.
I knew it was going to be Kirsch.
He's the best.
Yeah, love Kirsch.
Yeah, so many people are just so much fun.
So you had such a great time. You look at the career you were able to have at WWE. You got to do so many amazing things. What came down to you deciding to part ways with them?
So people think I had two options between WWE and AEW. And the reality was that I was considering three options, which was WWE, AEW, or just not being a full-time wrestler anymore and just being more of a full-time dad.
Yeah.
When I told that to Brie with the money that each company was offering me, I think she wanted to kill me. She might have wanted to kill me. But really it came down to a little bit schedule, a little bit of creative freedom, and also just this idea of I had been there for so long.
Yeah.
Maybe something a little bit new would be fun. I also kind of wanted to bleed. And so, which is a weird thing to say.
Let's unpack that a little bit.
Okay. So
what is the deal?
There is some... So if you were to ask me to bleed right now in front of... however many people we have here.
Call me the hard way, you brother.
I would say, no thanks. That doesn't sound like fun. You get in front of 1,000 people in the moment, inside a wrestling ring, bleeding. There's something about it that just makes you feel very alive, right? It's just
Is it like the blood in your eyes, in your mouth?
I don't know.
Fighting for your life a little harder.
I don't know what it is. There's just something to it. There's a magic to it.
I would like to conduct some kind of cross study on a few of you guys.
You should ask your husband because
Trust me,
he bleeds every match.
Most of the time,
not on purpose.
He came home last night. I fell asleep early last night, so he slept on the couch to not wake up the dogs and my daughter and all that. And he was like sleeping on the couch and I had his hoodie up and I just like pulled it back to be like, what are we working with here today? But he was okay. He's fine. Nothing. Yeah. All good. But yeah, the bleeding thing is just this other, I don't understand it, but that's.
You do it every month.
He's right.
Is that?
He's right.
Wait a second.
But
we talked about fisting. We just said fisting. There wasn't any. There wasn't a single O.
Menstruation.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like it's a natural part.
But mine's natural. Mine's not like self-inflicted. Does that make a difference?
Yeah, you probably don't enjoy it nearly as much.
Mine has side symptoms that come with it. I'm in a really bad mood. I'm bloated. I'm hungry. I'm upset. Yeah. It's all bad.
Yeah.
All bad. Okay, so you wanted to go to AW. You wanted to do this different style. You kind of wanted to just, especially at this age as well, to like see what this, I don't want to call it like a last run, but like really strong years of like kind of being in your prime, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of just kind of figuring out like what else can you do? You're a man that is like a wrestler's wrestler. Was there also, I don't know if I like read this somewhere, was there an option of you maybe staying with WWE and also doing dates with New Japan?
Yeah, I think they were trying to make that work out.
Yeah.
Which it eventually did not work out.
Did not.
So, which I think is good for everybody.
100%. So, definitely.
So, yeah.
So, what was the moment like between you leaving WWE and then going to AEW?
Well, I took 5 months off.
Yeah.
And it was great because I didn't really watch wrestling or think about wrestling for kind of the first time in my life. And I just spent time with my kids, and we were in Tahoe, and we were hiking, and we were just doing, it was amazing, which is why the third option of not going anywhere was very appealing to me.
I get it. I get it. When you get to spend time with your kids like that and just kind of step away, and you've already been able to scratch that itch for so long. I mean, of course, there's things that you want to do and all that, but when you see your kids and you get to hang out with them, I definitely get, like, even times for me, I'm like, should I just hang at home with this baby right now? Because it's really a good time.
Yeah.
It's lovely. It's so nice. Let's go back to when you retired.
Okay.
What all went into, I mean, I know obviously the medical side of things of you having to retire, but having to go out and actually like cut that promo. We were in Washington when you retired as well, right? Your mom was in the crowd?
My mom was in the crowd. A couple of my friends were in the crowd. It was weird because Vince McMahon had called me on the Saturday. It was a Monday when I came out and gave the speech. He called me on a Saturday and said, we're not going to clear you. I'd like you to announce your retirement on Monday. Because people, at that point, it's getting close to WrestleMania. People are wanting me to come back. I'm wanting to come back. Like, let's just get everything out of the way. Don't give them hope. And what better place to do it than in Seattle, where you're from, that sort of thing. And at first, I was like, I got to think about it. And then I talked to Bree. Like, they're not going to let me wrestle. I might as well be able to do it in front of my friends and family in the building where my dad last saw me wrestle, which was, like, very emotional for me. And so, yeah. So it was a really hard day. It was a hard day.
So even leading up to that day, though, like, having that conversation with Vince and swallowing that pill of, like, I've got to walk away from this right now. Like, what were those conversations you were having with yourself, the conversations you were having with Brie, with your family? Like, what? I can't imagine somebody saying, you can't do this thing you love anymore.
Yeah, so it was hard, but it wasn't as hard as it sounds, and it's, especially with how much I love wrestling. Because once I did the speech and I stepped away, I wasn't around wrestling.
Yeah.
So I started, oh God, but then we had to film Total Bellas. Jesus. Okay, that's the part I forgot.
Yeah.
Okay, so then shortly after this, so I have to give this retirement speech, and then I have to go live in John Cena's house.
Woohoo! Like, take off your shoes.
Because we're filming Total Bellas. I hate. I don't hate many things. I hate filming reality
television.
What do
you hate the most about it?
All of it. It's just like you're constantly changing clothes on the same day to go film something to pretend like it's a different day. This is supposed to be real. Can't I just wear my same clothes? And they're like, no, you cannot.
Just have a uniform like John, and, white t-shirt and jeans.
And I also, it was really hard because, you know, like when you're going through something like retiring, this thing that you love gets taken away from you. You'd like to be around friends and family. Bree was on the road full time with wrestling. So she was leaving on like Fridays, not coming back till Wednesdays. We'd film Wednesday, Thursday. Ugh. She leaves on Friday. I'm in John Cena's guest house. There's all these rules. I've got the dog. And like it was just like, I love John, right? Yeah. I think John's great, but that's not the ideal thing to be in. And then they manufacture these arguments that sometimes turn into real arguments.
Great.
And then one of the real arguments got real.
Oh, shit.
And then it was like, oh, Jesus, I don't want to be here anymore. So I just left. And yeah, it was bad.
You and John had an argument?
No. It actually started with me and Nicole having an argument.
Uh-oh.
About, because Bree and I had bought this property. We were going to build a house. I wanted it to be a smaller house. Nicole wanted it to be a bigger house. It's not your house. It's my house. Then it got into this thing about, oh gosh, yeah, so this...
Let's roll up our sleeves. Let's get into it.
It got into this thing about deserving stuff, right?
Oh, shit.
About deserving this or deserving that or whatever it is. And my opinion on all of it is that none of us deserve these things that we've gotten. For example, I've met a lot of fantastic wrestlers along the way who never got to where I was, purely because of luck, good or bad, good luck on my side, bad luck on their side. When you look at somebody like Nigel McGuinness,
right,
who in theory, the only reason he wasn't me or more successful because he was honest about tearing his bicep and I lied about concussions and seizures.
Yeah.
And that wasn't a thing that I went into the doctor. And when they're asking you these questions, it wasn't like I was thinking like, oh, I got to lie to him about my concussion thing. They ask, and in my, that part of your brain that just reacts on instinct, they said, oh, no, you know, I'm good. And like, yeah. And his thing was like, well, I got to tell him about my bicep tear or whatever. And that's the difference between me getting to where I got, yeah, and then him never having a match in WWE,
yeah,
right? So anyways, when we get back to the deserving stuff, somebody deserving a bigger house, when a bigger house is worse for the planet, and all that kind of stuff. And Bree and I had talked, and that didn't even seem to be what she wanted anyways. And then we get into this big thing, and then just left. Didn't go to Kathy's wedding, which I feel really bad about, yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, it was bad.
Yikes. Yeah. How long did it take for you guys to make up? I mean, you and Nicole are really close.
We apologized and had like that day, but it had put me in a mental state where I was, I mean, if there was ever, that's the closest I've ever come to like, okay, this is,
yeah,
I'm done.
Oh my gosh.
With all of it.
I was not ready for the story.
Yeah.
Not have that written down. It was not a question.
Hey, let's talk about the worst day of your life. Can we talk about that one?
I do like to get people emotional on the show. That's for sure.
Yeah. I don't get super emotional about it now.
No.
I love my life now.
Yeah, you got a great life.
I got a great life.
Great life. Hot wife, cute kids. It's
hot wife, cute kids.
Yeah, good career. It's
good
all happening.
Career.
And not to take away from those amazing, beautiful things, but you mentioned the concussions and the seizures. When you're going through those things, I mean, you were just out recently with injury again. What kind of goes into that? What goes into you being medically cleared again? What is like that process?
Well, So seeing a neurologist, and it was interesting, this last one, he said, you know, after you start feeling better, we're going to have to have a serious talk about your long-term health. And I thought what that meant was, after you feel better, I'm going to talk to you about not wrestling anymore.
Okay.
And that's kind of where I thought he was going. And then my brain scans came back so goddamn good. That not a single person could say anything about it, you know. And I think, you know, it's interesting because I do put a lot of work and effort into keeping my brain healthy and doing things outside of of normal stuff to keep my brain healthy. And so so I think that's paying dividends a little bit. And so, yeah.
Tell me about some of that stuff, though, because, okay, so you have to retire due to the concussions, due to all these circumstances. And, yeah, you took matters into your own hands. Everyone told you not to wrestle. You went and did your thing. What does that mean? What did you do?
Well, to say everybody told me not to wrestle, that's a bit of a stretch, because I was cleared. But that was the frustrating part, is that I was cleared by several neurologists.
Okay.
But not the one that mattered most. And then there were two neurologists otherwise who wouldn't clear me. And so it became like kind of a mixed issue.
Right.
Err on the side of caution type thing. But, you know, the developments in medicine and science are so much better now. And so there's a lot of stuff like hyperbaric oxygen therapy and all this kind of stuff that,
How often do you do that? Like, what is that? I hear these words and I don't actually know what that is.
Yeah. I don't think anybody cares.
Oh, okay. I was somewhat interested.
But for those of you who do care.
Google it.
It's being placed in like kind of a tube where it's 1.5 atmospheres of pressure, lots of oxygen being flooded into your brain. A lot of the military is doing it for people who have had concussions and all that kind of stuff in military things and that sort of thing. But it's not FDA approved yet, so it's not, for example, I mean, all that stuff's a long process. So anyways, I did that, where 100 sessions of that, where I'm in there for an hour and a half each time.
That sounds like a claustrophobic nightmare.
Oh, I love a good uncomfortable claustrophobia.
Mm.
I think it's a good chance to like really practice Zen and meditation. And that's a real thing. Like, you put me in an
uncomfortable... That's literally giving me like anxiety. I'd have a heart attack.
You put me in an uncomfortable position. My first thing is to freak out. And then shortly after that, I'm like, can I stay calm in this position? And in most cases, it's yes.
But there has been a no.
Yeah. So when I was, before I had my neck surgery in 2014, they were, God, I forget what it's called. The long needles.
Oh.
The long ones.
The like,
Yeah.
Shit.
They
what
were
is
doing,
that called?
They were doing something to alleviate the pain.
What was it? No, not acupuncture, right?
No, not acupuncture.
Like the like needle.
Yeah, no.
We're talking the good stuff
like,
here.
Epidural style. Yeah, epidural style. And so it was like, so they had me, I was face down, and, you know, they numb up your whole back, so I'm not supposed to feel anything. And then all of a sudden I got the worst pain I'd ever felt in my life, and the needle, this giant needle, had hit the nerve. And the doctor was like, oh, God. And like, he said, oh, God. And then...
abort mission.
I screamed out, fuck! and then they're like, well, we're already here. Do you want us to do it? And I was like, do you want us to try again? And I was like, okay. And then they finish, and then they come up to me with all these waivers.
Oh,
and they said,
shit.
We forgot to have you sign the waiver. And
great.
I'm just trying to, like, I'm trying to just, like, not die.
Yeah.
And so I signed the waivers, and finding Zen in that moment, I was not capable.
Oh, that's horrifying.
It happens sometimes.
Yeah, I was already in such a state of panic when I was getting my epidural that I was like, just do whatever you got to do back there.
Do whatever you do.
We'll get through this. It's all going to be fine. Okay, so you're in like the hyperbaric chambers. What other things are you doing that help your brain, help your body? I mean, you obviously do a ton of research, a ton of reading. You're a pretty smart guy. What else are you doing?
Yeah, so I think diet, I think, helps brain function. There's a lot of that I probably don't want to get into because I don't want to give people the wrong information. I am not a doctor.
Fair.
I am not somebody to listen to for advice.
You guys all signed the waiver, right?
Yeah. But I think there's some dietary choices that you can make that affect brain health. I also think constant learning is good for neurological circuits in your brain. And I think, you know, there's things about like, okay, cardio, like 30 to 45 minutes of cardio at like 120 beats per minute. This is getting too deep into the stuff, but it helps your brain recover.
Oh.
So I've never been somebody who's into steady state cardio. I like doing sprint work. I like doing that sort of thing. But apparently the steady state low cardio is good for improving brain function.
Interesting.
So all of that kind of stuff, you know, just a lot of the stuff on longevity science about staying away from Alzheimer's and all that kind of stuff that you can look up and research now. I mean, there's a lot of great information on it that they've advanced in the last 10 years. And even just that, I think also will improve people's brain who have had concussion issues.
Yeah.
And so yeah, all that kind of stuff, I think. But it's also fun to learn new things. It's fun. Like, I learned how to speed read a couple years ago.
How do you learn to speed read?
Oh, God.
I'd have, like, a ruler on each line, like, trying to just, like, make the most of it. What do you do?
Yeah, some people think speed reading is skimming, and it's not. So so I'm at, right now, over 500 words per minute, which is most people, on average, read 200 words per minute. John F. Kennedy apparently read 1,000 words a minute. So, I mean, there's still room for improvement.
Where do you gather this intel from?
What's that?
It's amazing.
So it's amazing what you can learn if you read books instead of look at your phone.
Right. Sure.
I think that that's like a real thing. So
yeah,
one of the things people ask me about social, like, when they talk to me about social media, especially like some of the younger guys in the locker room who really love social media and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And my point of view on it is this. If you're looking to it for if you had a good match, how good is my match? Let's look at Twitter to see if I was doing a PhD in psychology, I wouldn't submit my paper to the people on Twitter to see if it was good. I would probably ask my professor. Likewise, just as far as general information, I think most people spend less than 5 minutes crafting a tweet or
Oh, I do
Instagram.
That all the time. I'm like, oop, where's that edit button? Whoops-a-daisy.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, it's not something people have put a ton of thought into. Whereas, for example, a great nonfiction book. Take Sapiens by Yuval Noah Harari.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So that guy has spent his entire life learning the history of humanity and put it into one book that you can read in, I don't know.
It's a pretty thick book.
Yeah.
It's
so
a
it
big
takes
one.
Me about a week, right? So most people it might take a month. But even just reading, if you spend an hour on Twitter a day, spending an hour on Sapiens, you would get so much more out
yeah.
of it.
Yeah.
Football fans, check out the Three and Out podcast with John Middlecoff, only on the Volume Podcast Network. John brings his unique perspective as an ex-NFL scout to The Volume to break down all the news around the NFL and college football. Whether you're looking for game predictions, coaching searches, the ins and outs of the NFL front office, even an occasional golf tip, John has you covered. Download 3 and Out with John Middlecoff, only on The Volume Podcast Network. This feels like our old promo days.
Yes.
We got to do a lot of promos together.
We really did. Oh my God, we did so many promos. Remember the time that I was told that we needed to do it on the other side?
Yep. Was that the time, I feel like it was when, God, I can picture the building, when we were there super, super late,
like
doing it over and over.
Yes.
Virginia. Yes,
yes,
it was in Virginia.
It was where, some beach. Norfolk. Yes.
Norfolk, Virginia. That, yeah, I do think that that's exactly where it was. And yep, we were like stuck backstage going over and over. The dogs have decided to join us for this episode. Welcome you
Love
guys.
It. Good to see you both.
Love dogs. I don't know how they even open that door. I can barely open that door, but
I have three of them now.
How did you go from having no dogs to now having these three like beautiful beasts just running all over your house?
Oh my God. Well, it started with getting Joy for Miro.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a teacup palm for myself.
Uh-huh.
And then I guess, I don't know, kind of Miro's on the road and I'm so used to doing like 1700 things.
Yes.
And hustling and working hard and that. And I just feel like, cause I'm just not traveling, I needed to get some
yeah.
other dramatic thing.
I hear so, you. I had a baby. I recommend that too. I mean, it's all up there. We got to like fill our time.
Yes.
We are doers yes. and we like to have a full pack schedule.
I know.
When we wake up to when we go to bed.
Yep.
How has that
affected you? Even though, like, I know you're obviously still busy doing a million different things, but I don't think anything ever really compares to like the busy when you're on the road.
Oh yeah, nothing.
With like WWE and like doing house shows, we've got TV, you've got blah, blah, blah. How was that kind of stepping away in that aspect and like adjusting to life on the other side?
My time with WWE finished in June 2nd, and then I started Surreal Life 6 weeks later.
Oh my God, yes!
Yeah, and that's gonna, I've supposedly come out at the end of the year
okay.
on MTV and Paramount Plus. Okay. And so that was crazy. That started July 17th in Mexico City, and I was essentially trapped in a house with eight other celebrities, uh-huh. including Dennis Rodman, Tamar Braxton.
The Worm, baby.
Yeah, like so many great people. And so I went from like one drama to the drama of all dramas. Like imagine Total
Divas. Really stressful.
It was so stressful. And I know that sounds so ridiculous.
I feel like my hair would fall out. Legit, like that is crazy.
And they take your phone. You have no doors. So like Dennis Rodman would just show up in our bedroom, like me and Tamar together. And like we wake up and Dennis Rodman's just sitting there like smoking a cigar. I'm like, what is happening right now?
Oh yeah, my God.
So it was crazy. So that was like, you really like you can't stand everyone at one point, but then you love everyone. Again, another dysfunctional family.
Yeah, I was gonna say, so the locker room.
Yes. Yes. And so when I left, I guess before that, I was struggling with like, am I ever going to get over the heartbreak of leaving WWE?
Yeah.
And then I did Surreal Life and I realized, no, you put me in the right situation.
Yeah.
I will make new friends. I will, you know,
yeah.
adjust. And yeah. So that was like the following a week or two, I was adjusting from that, leaving that world and missing those people. And then from there, the next 6 months, I was just enjoying not being on the road.
Yeah.
Like I had been pretty much nonstop. Like I counted that over 8 years, I spent 800 days in a plane.
It's so funny to me after like being on the road, as long as we were traveling as much as yeah. we were, my bag in the front of this Airbnb, I'm like, what's in this bag?
Yeah.
Who packed this bag? I don't know how to pack a bag. You would think that would be a skill that you would acquire over these years. And it's like, yep. I left and I'm like, I don't know how to do that at all anymore. I have not yeah. a clue.
Well, the packing was always the most stressful. Like yeah. I was like, why does it take you 7 hours? And I'm like, well, I have to plan my outfits.
Yeah. My problem is I don't plan my outfits. So I just like, I'm like, maybe this and maybe this. This could maybe be an option. And I end yeah. up with like 6,000 things that I don't even end up wearing. But it's stupid. Okay. How did this Surreal Life even come about? It's funny because I mean, obviously like getting ready for this interview, I was like, oh yeah, cool. But I like forgot. I remember reading that had yeah. happened.
So it's been a
long
year.
Time.
It was
yeah.
last year at the, I was filming it in Mexico City right now.
Okay.
A year ago.
Yeah.
And so, my manager reached out to me. I was still with WWE. He reached out and he was like, Surreal Life wants you. And I'm like, what? Like, I thought I was getting ribbed. Cause I'm
yeah.
like, I'm like out of all the celebrities, even from WWE, like why me? And they're like, no, they want you. And he also manages Eva. And so I was like, whoa, like they wouldn't want her. And he's like, specifically they're asking for you. So I did the whole submission.
Baby's booked.
Submitted it to.
What did you have to do for the submission?
No, I just submitted to John Cohn and Johnny Hayes. You know, the typical.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't any type of audition. They were like, we want you.
Plucked.
I think it might have been, I guess maybe Total Divas. I also wonder like maybe with the story I was doing with Bobby Lashley. Mm. I don't know. Like that's me really reading into
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
but I
yeah.
wonder if they're like all these like, is she really maybe scandalous? Who's to say? I have no idea. But, and it's also just, that's entertainment. Like
yeah.
really, if I break it down, all the things that throughout my entire career I've auditioned for
yeah.
that, you know, you think sometimes you're like, oh, I killed that audition. I should get it. And you don't get it. You don't even get a call back.
Sure.
And then there's jobs like WWE and of all the hundreds of thousands of people that want to get
yeah.
into WWE and want to be a character and wrestle and work for WWE. I got
yeah.
picked or, yeah. you know, Pitch Perfect the same way. I didn't even audition for Pitch Perfect. And I got just a call from my agent. They're booking you.
I have like a love-hate relationship with the audition process. Sometimes
oh, yeah.
I like,
oh, yeah.
I think I like the prep that goes into like prepping
oh, for sure.
for an audition. Yeah. I enjoy that. But yeah, it's, I don't think I'm a good auditioner.
Oh my
I think
God.
I eat shit every time.
No, you're good at everything you do.
No, you're so smart.
You're so smart. I'm always telling Miro, I'm like, she's so cool. She's also so smart. So,
oh my God. Blessings and salutations. I'll take it. I'll take it all day. Are you still friends with anybody from this real life?
Yeah, I talked to Tamar Brex and she was my roommate.
Okay.
She, she's made for reality TV. She's hilarious. She's good reality TV.
How different was this than doing Total Divas?
I think because of Total Divas and we understand that things get like beaded out.
Yeah.
And I think at this point it's like no real secret about that stuff. Yeah. You know, with the Kardashians and selling sunsets, everyone kind of knows like there's heels, there's baby faces. And however, they definitely tried to like not do that.
Yeah.
And so that's what we were dealing with surreal life. Like they were trying to pretend it's all reality. Mm. And so me and Tamar, because Tamar did 10 seasons of reality TV with her family and they have won like awards.
Yeah.
We're all like,
you've been there and done
and
that.
I'm like, they're trying to set us up. She's like 100%. And then the crazy thing is you have Kim Coles who comes from scripted television and then Manny MUA, who's a huge vlogger.
Okay.
And so he's never done reality TV. And then Frankie Muniz.
I heard that name in a minute.
I know. And so when me and Tamar are like, hey, this is like, you know, you can't believe everything the producers are telling you.
Right.
They were like, what are you talking about? And it's like, no, but really you can't.
Yeah. We're not on like a real set with like the trailers and the glitz and the glam. Yeah. This is like the nitty gritty. We're making an entertaining show.
Totally.
God, remember when you and I got in like a fight on Total Divas? Did I tell you like fuck off or something?
I feel like something like that. You were like being like, I was being bratty.
I think we were both being bratty.
I was, those were like my, non-drinking days.
Those are your non-drinking days? You weren't drinking then?
Like the first 2 years in WWE, I really didn't drink at all.
Yeah.
I've gone through those stages, but like if anyone else is drinking, I'm just like a stick up my ass type
of thing. Oh, okay. And I would
like
been
Renee,
throwing down.
We're trying to sleep. Like right well, now, I would probably
Trent and I were trying to like break into your room and like wreak havoc while you and Miro were trying to catch some Z's. So we deserved it, but
we should have been taking shots with you. That's where the fun was.
You should have been. Okay, let's talk some WWE things because, of course, that's what everybody wants to hear and wants to talk about. And it's where we spent all of our time together. You had such an interesting career in WWE. I mean, you got to do so many different things. But I mean, you coming in there starting as a valet, what was kind of like the initial pitch for that? And I guess just like the success of it, because it's a real art form. Of course, we know that of like being a valet in WWE, but you like fucking crushed it. Like you were so good.
Thank you. I think that it was, you know, I came in with an acting background and just performance and storytelling and basically committing to whatever character, like playing a romance story. I mean, I was doing Nutcracker and Swan Lake, like all these things were showing a story that you're in love with someone and then heartbreak and betrayal was just normal.
Yeah.
And, you know, then with acting, you just learn to do it with words and not just your body. And so with WWE, I connected with all those aspects really quickly of like, okay, we can tell stories with our words, but we can also tell stories with our action and bodies. And I felt like the verbiage part, I picked up a lot quicker because
promo for sure.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. And I think at WWE, you know, everyone is athletic. When people are dissing, oh, that person sucks. No, everyone's amazing.
Good. Yeah.
Everyone is the best athletes in the world. It's just some of them are gold medalists. You know, some of them are like the 0.0001%. Mm-hmm. And those are the people like the Charlottes, the Ronda Rouseys, they're winning. And kind of a lot of times, rightfully so. You know, they really would kick my ass in a real fight. So
I would not want to participate in that fight. No, thank you.
So when I just started in NXT, I would do a ton of different pitches. Like I would, every week I would bring Dusty like a huge board of like 7 different character pitches. And he immediately paired me with Miro, like, because I was Russian and he was Bulgarian. So that means, you know,
of course, here we go,
you know, Eastern Europe. And, we got paired together and I just really always committed to it. I think I always really wanted to play a Russian character. So that was kind of falling into my dream.
And did you pitch that too? Or Dusty just saw that already?
I didn't necessarily think I could pull off with a Russian accent. In Hollywood prior to that, I would audition for a lot of Russian characters, but it was usually a Russian character that had to speak Russian and then fluent English.
Okay.
And then the ones that you had to do an accent, I just, it was really Triple H being like, we need you with an accent. So I was like, okay, give me a couple days.
Yeah.
And I got a coach and I got the accent. And, but I, it was my dream. Like I always wanted to play a Russian character
because
I grew up in the former Soviet Union. And also, what's going to make me stand out over all the other brilliantly amazing actresses that are blonde out there? Or just, you know, so it was kind of that. And then Miro, they wanted to bring up and we just had a great connection. We were doing more comedy. So they wanted us to do something more serious. And then it just like kept going. Triple H really had hands on it. And Road Dogg had hands on and Arn Anderson and Billy Gunn, like all of them really, really had a part of, you know, honing it. And then Vince, we were doing the Bulgarian, he was doing the Bulgarian thing and I was doing the Russian thing. And that was like for the first 3-4 months up until WrestleMania where we actually debuted twice. And within a month, Vince called us in and he's like, okay, Rusev is going to reside in Russia. And you're going to start dedicating matches to Vladimir Putin. And
I forgot about that.
And I would have to cut my promos in front of Vince.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What is that like cutting a promo in front of Vince when he is like hyper focused on what you and Miro were doing at the time?
Yeah. I would definitely get really nervous, but he was always happy with it. I would do it. And he really didn't have many notes. I think his biggest notes. Yeah. He would just be like, be natural. And then I would do it. The promos he was always happy with. One time he told me I needed to work on my acting, which was,
did that kill you?
It
did
really
that, like,
did.
I feel like it's like it Ralphie's did. Like heartbreaking when Lisa breaks up with him.
yes. Basically he goes, you're playing a manager. And I basically bent down and I was like going like this, like how Paul Heyman or Zelina would do or Summer. No, he was like, that is not, he's like, you're playing a wrestling manager. He's like, I just need you to be you. And I'm like, so I never did
that. Isn't
that
the worst thing someone says? Just be you. And you're like, I don't think I know what that means as it pertains to this situation.
So I never did that again. And I think it was also a segment that I did with Zeb. Yes. And Swagger.
That guy.
And we were doing some debate and I got really mad. And he pulled me aside. He was like, you're playing the state of mad. He's like, I just need you to listen. And it was interesting because I was in acting class. Immediately I got back into acting class. And my biggest issue, my teacher was like, you're pretending to listen. You're not actually listening. Mm. And then I realized that was actually a bad habit I had in life. I would pretend to listen. And I'm like, oh wow, acting's like really bringing a lot of things. So
acting is therapy class is
pretty
what
much,
it is.
Pretty
definitely.
Much. So yeah, but he was always really happy. I told him, I'm like, oh, I'm in acting class. And he's like, I see a big difference. Great job.
Great. God, remember we used to have an acting coach on the road?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that. But I really liked that. I mean,
I liked that stuff. I know a lot of people were like very against it, hated it. And
oh,
I'm like,
I remember.
Can I attend? I love that stuff.
I loved it. I just think that.
I think me, you, and Miz were maybe the only people that enjoyed that was a thing.
Yeah.
Everyone else hated it.
Want to talk me how to get it deeper into just tap into different emotions. But also one thing I really took with me that I think really helped my wrestling promos was I would always pause, like, and a lot of wrestlers do this, like they'll do the promo and right before they're about to do the zinger, you know, the drop the bomb, they do a long pause and they drop it versus like, don't play the meaning of the line. Like just say it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that's what we do in life.
Yeah.
And it's actually a lot more impactful. So I
but
really
isn't
started
hard to do in front of a crowd because you do have to work on like the pacing to like the reactions and like like listening to them.
For sure. That was the one thing I liked about during the pandemic, which that probably the only thing that I liked is that one, I knew I could time my promo to the T.
Yes.
And then also you don't have to cater as much to the sound because if they're making more noise, you do
you
need
have to
pause because that's going to be a part of the success of the segment.
Yes.
So that was interesting, but I don't know. Vince would always say, he would always be like, you're my actress. You can do anything. And I think that's why he gave me all those, like the doll stories and the Bobbies and the Aidens. Oh, I mean, I've had so many scandals.
Who hasn't she been with, you guys? What is that like making out with a man in front of your husband?
I don't know. I really came from the act.
Like, I'm not sure I blacked out during
it.
I
do feel like I kind of black out in it. I think that I, again, going from such a young age, telling stories of romance and mm-hmm. love. And like at 15 years old, I was casted in this ballet, modern dance ballet, that it was about the Holocaust. And was getting married and falling in love. And my mother was the director. And I had to kiss this boy. And I was like 16. Yeah. And so it's just kind of like, it's just the job.
You can separate them.
Yeah. It's just like, it's not, it's the job. You're storytellers. Yeah. And so like,
I mean, they were hot and heavy makeouts though. They were pretty.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't know. With I just go blank. The crazy thing though with Dolph, what was super awkward was that we actually had to practice the kiss in front.
Vince. What?
Yes.
Shut your mouth.
So, and Johnny Ace. So, and the funny thing is Summer, you'll love this. Summer the week before was telling, you know, Summer's such a great storyteller, yes, and she's hilarious.
Yeah.
And so she's telling the story of how she had to practice kissing Dolph in front of Vince and her Layla section. And I was like, what? You had to practice in front of Vince? Yeah, right. She's like, be ready. You might need to do the same at some point. I'm like, oh my God. Okay. A week later, we get called in. It's Ace, Vince, Dolph, Miro. And we had to practice the kiss. And Miro's like turning red in the corner. He's just like, you know, and Vince is like, what? We're all adults. What's the problem? What's the problem? We're all adults. This is professionalism. Don't be weird. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So we do it. And Vince goes, no, 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 no. He's like way slower. He doesn't fully kiss Johnny Ace, but he does it fully super slow and they get like this close.
Stop.
Like, this is, I could not, I mean, it was hilarious. Dolph is dying. Like he's literally in the corner
my God.
Dying because, you know, he's close with Ace.
Sure,
and, like, Vince,
sure.
And it's apparently not his first time.
Oh my God.
But that's why we went so slow in that segment. I recently watched it with one of my friends and I was like, this is so slow, but everyone was like, oh, you look so innocent. Like you had never done it before. And that's what Vince was going for. Like Vince was going for, like, especially that kiss versus the other one.
Yeah.
He wanted it to be like innocent. She's right. Never kissed someone before. And it was like,
how sweet.
It was very weird.
That is but so funny.
He was happy with it. And that YouTube was the most watched YouTube
hot
in
and
all
heavy.
Of 2015. It's wow. Like over 52 or like 60 million.
Bunch of pervs just crazy. Trying to get eyes on the product, baby.
I actually got a lot more female young teenager fans from the Dolph story.
Really?
I think so many people were like young girls had crushes on Dolph. Like my sister.
Come on.
Like so many people that if I told you, you would be like, oh my God, more well-known people now. They
really?
Were like 14 and now they're like 20, you know. Like,
oh, okay.
And they all had huge crushes. And
we should call Dolphin. We should just like FaceTime and be like, yo, bro, do you know about this shit?
Yeah, they're legal now. They're 21.
Oh my God, that is so funny. Okay, just while we're still on like Vince being super into everything, the bun in the outfits.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
that was a whole to do as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, totally.
Like the bun placement, yeah. what the suits are going to be.
Oh, yeah.
It was like a very big deal.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's crazy. Because you were in NXT when I was still like developing, finding the look. Hunter really wanted me to like go to stores and figure out. I tried on so much different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They landed with basically the concept of, I showed him a picture, Triple H, of Pitch Perfect, the opening Barney Bellas with like the little bun and like the little suit. And he's like, I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
So then I would just buy suits from like guests and Marciano and came up to, you know, that's what I was doing in NXT and then came up to WWE and Vince was like, no. And he wanted everything shorter. Like, and I'll never forget, like to me, this is like, I don't take it any awkward way because I've worked in, again, in entertainment for so long. And these are just the conversations that just are had all the time.
Yeah.
And so when I'm saying this, I'm not trying to like over-sexualize the situation, especially with everything that's
given
going on
the,
now.
Temperatures.
Yeah. So I never took it at as like anything was inappropriate, but they're like, no, we want the skirt a little bit shorter. Mm-hmm. We want it just a little bit tighter. And also like, he didn't like that I was in flats.
Sure.
And but in NXT, they wanted to put over his size.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So he was like, I want our heels. And I immediately was like, that's Russian. So yeah. To me being like, I thought my skirts were too long, but in NXT, what they were saying, they're like, we don't want you to be like basically overly hot.
Yes.
Because you might take away.
Yes. Where the Vince heat. Was like, no, we want you to be super hot.
Yeah. And yeah. then also usually traditionally Vince is like, I don't want someone to take the heat away from the guys.
Yeah.
But he was like, no, shorter skirt. And that's Russians, like Russian yeah. women in the middle of winter, they have the short skirts on, they have the high heels, the mm-hmm. big fur coat,
yeah.
the red lips, they're always dressed up. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know any Russian woman that wouldn't wear heels. They yeah. wear heels on the sand, you know? So yeah. it resonated me with the character. Mm-hmm. And I felt like how I started coming out with the custom made suits yes. by Sandra.
Yeah.
She used to make Deborah suits and mm-hmm. Stacey Keebler stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, that's Russian. Like yeah. that's right. So I didn't look at it
and
as
it's a very
than
fine
that.
Line too. Cause if you have like an ill fitted suit, it is no. the farthest thing from yeah. being sexy.
And these were like costume suits.
Yes.
Like yeah. they were like costume suits. So I was so happy. I was so confident with it. I think, you know, I was like 26.
Yeah.
And so I, to me, all these other girls are 20, 21. So I just felt more confident in that. Cause I'm like, this is age appropriate
yeah.
versus me trying to go and compete with, you know, Paige and Sasha who are all 21 years old. And
yeah.
so like, I don't know. I'm just, yeah. So I felt really, really confident in it. I know that bun was kind of a thing we all decided on. Mm-hmm. And then once it was decided, it was kind of a Vince and a Triple H thing. Like Triple H didn't want me. They go, no, just do the bun. Like, don't change that.
Stick in with the bun.
Yeah.
It's funny how like that branding stuff works though. Cause I remember even when I started yeah. and I had to wear a ponytail
oh,
all
yeah.
the time.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if that was direct from Vince or not. It must have been.
Probably.
But yeah, it was like, I had to wear my hair in a ponytail. Cause I think they didn't want me to be confused
with other blondes. Probably.
And with like, just with being like a diva. They wanted me to be a professional, polished
yeah.
broadcaster, blah, blah, blah.
And I get that.
No, I get it. I get it. But I remember at yeah. the time being like, oh, I hate this. I don't want to wear my hair in a ponytail all the time. Ugh.
Totally. Well, I went through another crazy, I know I went through like so many other revamps, but then my last year when I was with Naya, it was same way.
Yeah.
I had to wear pink.
Oh, really?
I had to wear a ponytail. He got very, very, cause he all of a sudden in the women's division, he really liked what I was doing with Naya.
Yeah.
And so he looked at me as, he wanted me like to be the girl in distress.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
the super baby face pink, the leotard, the high pony, that to him was Lana. And I came back for the Royal Rumble mm-hmm. and I had a gold kind of, not a two piece, it was still like a one piece, but more like shorts than a high cut, like
did he hate
leotard.
It?
And my hair was down. My hair was like your color and
yeah.
maybe a little darker. And so it wasn't platinum blonde, but it was like, you know, blondish brown and it was down. And I got a call and he was like, that is not Lana. I need you to come back in pink and in leotard with your hair in a ponytail and blonder.
Oh Lord.
So that's what I did. And I just was like, cool. And then he's like, yeah, this is Lana. This is who you are, Lana.
Yeah.
You're my Lana.
There she is. Yeah. There she
like,
is.
Cool.
Okay. So you had such a great gig. As valet, I feel like you could have like done that forever, but you had the itch that you really wanted to wrestle. Like what was sort of the progression of you as a valet into getting into the ring?
This is going to be an interesting thing. So like in all transparency, because I feel like if I'm completely being honest, I'm always working a little bit. Like
yeah.
that's where I get from Natty and just
sure.
not just Natty, a lot of people, you know,
yeah.
and just like, okay, well, what we have this many seconds, this many minutes on Total Divas or on mm-hmm. a .com or what is the narrative? What story do you want to tell?
Yeah.
And the bottom line is Vince wanted me to wrestle. There was a reason why I wanted to wear suits and I wanted to talk on the mic. My favorite characters were Miss Elizabeth, Paul mm-hmm. Heyman, Stephanie McMahon, Vicky,
yeah.
you know, these people that could talk and carry segments and tell stories with, you know, essentially with words where
yeah.
then later we resolve the conflict in the ring.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I loved. And Stephanie McMahon is one of my favorites, mm-hmm. you know, cause she did so
oh, she's the best.
Much,
yeah.
you know, from corporate, the relationships stories. Uh-huh. And I knew that was my strength and I'll never forget Vince called us into the office and this was after we had split up, because he was adamant. He was like, you cannot be with Rusev anymore. When we started the We Want Lana chant started, he was
yes.
like, that's it. You
yeah.
cannot. He's like, you have two choices. We can either do a relationship story or you're going to have to go back down to NXT to learn how to wrestle.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'll do a relationship story. Like, that's cool. So then that started. And then, you know, a month and a half in, he brings Summer in. We had no idea. And Miro's like, why? Like, what's happening?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, we're going to have a match. And Miro didn't want me to wrestle. Mm. Like, he's very, very old school. And then he marries me. God bless him. And
bless that sweet man.
He's very traditional. And also, he's just like, he gets worried. He doesn't want me to get hurt. Mm-hmm. And on top of it, he's like, you're so good at what you do. Why are you going to go try to, you know, Paige just got up. Becky, Sasha, all those girls were about to come up.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I'm not going to be able to catch up with those people. And it's going to at least take 10 years or
yeah, it takes a long time. It honestly takes forever.
These girls have been wrestling for a long time and they're younger on top of it. And so I was like, okay, I'm fine with that. But like, I just think I'm great at this. Let me do what I'm great at versus like, I don't know if I'm going to catch up to these girls.
Yeah.
We had this conversation in the office and this is actually the first time saying the story. And I was just like, I just don't think I'm going to ever be that great. I want to be great at stuff, not good.
Right.
And he's like, no, this is a wrestling company. And he's like, you have to at the very least know how to bump. He goes, you have to know how to resolve your conflict in the ring. And your conflict is summer and you're going to resolve it in the ring. And that was that.
God.
And Miro didn't say anything else. And I was like, okay. And you're right. This is a wrestling company.
Yeah.
If I just want to do acting, I probably should fuck off.
Right.
So I do have respect for this. So many other people would want that spot. So I'm going to work my ass off. That was 2015. And Hunter told me, never stop training. So that whole year I had been training, like getting in with Fit, getting in with Goldust, to the fact that no one wanted to help me because they're like, we don't want you to get hurt because we were in such a big program with, you know, John and Miro. But I was like, no, I just, because Hunter was like, trust me. He goes, no one's going to be like, you need to wrestle. And then one day Vince is going to wake up and be like, well, it's time for Lana to have a match.
Let's do it.
Yeah. He's like, you want to be ready. And then I talked to Stephanie and Stephanie's like, you know, at the very least, know how to bump, like know how to take falls, know how to take basic hits. She's like, that's what he wants you to do. And so I just started training my ass off. And then I just didn't think it really resonated with the story of like, if I'm going to go on Total Divas and be like, yeah, I'm only doing this because Vince McMahon wants me to do it. I just don't think that's even interesting. Like who cares? And you're going to be more of a heel. And I've already like, in general, I'm a heel, so which is fine. I love being
natural-born heel over here.
Yes. But I do love wrestling.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't like a lie. Like I love wrestling, and if this is what he wants me to do, and it is a wrestling company, I'm gonna work my ass off. Of course, I'd rather mismanage because that's what I'm great at.
Yeah.
But hey, you're the director. So.
What was kind of like your relationship with the fans at that point? Because it felt like people were like, "What's happening here? I don't know if I like this." But then I think that there was a point that it did start to swing back the other way where people could see like, oh, you legit were putting in a lot of work. And I think people could see that like you do respect this business and you wanted to be out there. And obviously everybody wants to do a good job. Nobody wants to show up and be like, what's happening? But you get put in situations that you're like just figuring it out.
Yeah.
But what was your like relationship with the fans during that?
I mean, it was really hard for me. Really hard the first 2 years because I didn't get a lot of television matches. Mm-hmm. And for a bit, I was like really fighting to even get live event matches. Yeah. And I will forever be very thankful to Michael Hayes because Michael Hayes, it probably was like 2017. And Vince was like, yeah, let her wrestle on live events. And so he started just booking me with Tamina on live events, even if we weren't on television. And I was just, this is where I really started to earn the respect from my coworkers and from the girls. Cause I think it also took a second cause I think I got really pushed and especially 2015 as like kind of wrestling more or not like, you know, just more female in the female locker room. And I think that, people thought maybe I just wanted to not put the work in. And I think once 2017 happened and I was taking every comeback, like I would go on tour and 14 days straight, I'm like, I'll take the comeback. Or if I was on the baby face, I will take the heat. Like I wanted to take the hardest part because I wanted to pay my dues.
Yeah.
And I think after about a year of doing that, like I really earned the respect of, you know, like Becky Lynch and Charlotte, Natty, these girls that were kind of the pillars of the locker room. Yeah. And I learned so much from them. So then when I actually started having matches on television weekly with Nia, it was like, oh yeah, finally people had been seeing me.
Yeah.
You know, what I've been training for so long and it just takes time.
Yeah.
You know, that was like probably 5 years then at that point of wrestling regularly, having live event matches. And you can't practice matches with no fans is one thing, but you have to be out there.
Yeah.
And I just really fell in love with it. I think as a wrestler, I make a better baby face, like selling comes a little bit better for me than unless they gave me bodyguards, because it's just not as believable. Right, like who, most of the girls are, you know, taller than me, stronger than me. So I felt like as a baby face, like was more of my niche as a wrestler. But as a whole, I think my niche, my sweet spot is a heel.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us, guys. Hopefully you enjoyed the week, enjoyed the best of the sessions. You guys can hear the full-length interviews anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Just download them, give them a listen, give them a like, a review. And if you want to see what you're hearing, head on over to my YouTube page. Just search Renee Paquette. It's all up there, and you can see us talking, having this interview, having a hangout. It's all up on there, and that's been like a really great, cool, growing community. So I'm really enjoying the hangouts on the YouTube as well, so we can see you guys over there. And jump in the comment section, you know? Jump in, chime in, leave a comment. We like filtering through them all, reading about them. Maybe even, like, I don't know, some constructive criticism if you had it. We're all ears. God, did I open up a can of worms by saying that? I don't know. Be nice. Be cool in there. This has been The Sessions.